Mediocrity Podcast. Talk about that nerdy stuff. Movies, comics, and video games. It's all good and there ain't no fluff. Brian Kluger is hosting the show. Jeremy Miggert's got jokes. Jonathan Atterbury sounds really handsome, and we all sure love you folks.
And welcome to the amazing, the thrilling, the, well, maybe not amazing or thrilling, but it's a mediocre podcast called Mediocrity. Boys and girls, it's my favorite podcast. I might be biased, but I think it's a pretty decent podcast. We might be a little better than mediocre. We're Mediocrity. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher Radio. Look us up under Multimedia Man. I'm Brian Kluger. And as always, I have the amazing Jonathan Atterbury. How are you?
I'm great, man. How are you?
I'm doing well.
That I was just really enjoying that intro because it just kind of had a good dynamic to it. It was just ramping up and up until it went off the cliff and you introduced me.
I was like, here we are for Jonathan Atterbury. How are you? You had a good weekend. You've got a new addition to your family. You've got a Millennium Falcon shirt coming on. What's going on?
Yeah, man, all good things. Like you said, I have a new addition to the family. My sister had her second daughter, so I got to meet my second niece, and it was awesome.
So you're Uncle 2.0?
I'm a level 2 uncle.
Preferred skills in magic and Star Wars.
I will be able to teach her how to lightsaber fight.
Oh, well, good. And join us, as always, is the amazing, the incredible, he's still an uncle version 1.0 or a level 1 uncle, Jeremy Maggart.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good, man. How about you?
Good. Very good. Did you have a good weekend?
I did, man. It was lots of fun. Just been getting to work out.
And I have to ask, because you sent me a text earlier this week or this weekend in that you watched Beauty and the Beast live action. What were your quick thoughts on that movie?
Oh, man, that was just craptacular. Like, that was so bad. It was impressive.
Oh, yeah. And that's what you wrote to me, I think. And I, because I'm in the minority on that movie, as well as maybe a couple other critics, and now you, because most people really loved that live-action Beauty and the Beast, and I really cannot see how they loved it. Of course, it made a billion.
People love a shitload of auto-tune, and I'm just not one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same way, but I just didn't think it had any of the emotional tone or fun as the 1991 animated version. I didn't like any of it. I mean, I actually thought Gaston, Luke Evans as Gaston, was pretty entertaining. I liked him. Other than that, I thought the costumes were good. After that, the movie was terrible.
They pretty much kind of wrecked a lot of the songs, and Emma Watson, while is a physically a good Belle, there was just no effort whatsoever in that movie. Just as, like, unanimated a performance as you could possibly get. Yeah. And I feel like if you're gonna do a recreation of an animated movie, probably don't start out with the opening scene as something not from the original animated movie.
Nope. There you go.
You know, it's like if you want to add stuff later. But as soon as the movie opened with that weird, like, dance scene of him, like, at his party or whatever, I was like, okay, this is gonna suck. And then it was downhill from there.
Well, I'm glad we have the same thoughts on that movie. Most people would disagree with us, but, and Atterbury, you haven't seen it yet, have you?
Not just yet, but I plan on not seeing it at all.
Well, you might end up seeing it.
No. I'm good. Thank you.
Well, since we got that out of the way, we, of course, you know, like I said earlier, we are a Mediocrity Podcast. We're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe to us. Please let us know How Much You Love Us by going to iTunes and searching Multimedia Men, and you'll see all of our Mediocrity podcasts. I believe this is our 45th episode. Holy God. We've been around a while, and we're loving it.
We also have to mention that we had a milestone just last week. We had our one-year anniversary of the show.
Happy anniversary, guys.
Happy anniversary.
I feel we should like be in
happy
like
anniversary.
We need to have like a three-way kiss or something like that. Or three-way tip touch or something like that.
Well, mine can stretch pretty long, but it can't quite reach to Dallas, Texas.
That's not what I heard. Well, we'll do it sometime.
What have you heard?
What have I heard? I've heard. Yeah. Oh, I've heard it's pretty nasty, but I heard it's pretty long though.
not nasty as in gross. Just nasty as in like naughty.
Oh well, it's a bold bit of nastiness, yes. But we have a good show coming up. We're going to talk about a bunch of stuff that came out or coming out. As well as we're later in the show, we're going to talk about, let you know some of our favorite drummers. Because, you know, we like to talk about movies and video games and comic books and stuff. But we also love music. Actually, Jeremy and John are musicians. Actually, I would say they're professional musicians because they have actually been paid to play music. But we're going to talk about our favorite drummers and favorite songs that have like the best drum solos in them and stuff like that. So maybe that'll inspire everyone listening to, you know, get out that 8-track and find that old classic rock song or heavy, I don't know, jazz song. Who knows? We're going to get into it. But first, there's new movies. One of you said that there is new news on the Spider-Man universe in the cinematic world. What's the new news?
I read earlier today that, so funny enough, I guess the head of Sony Studios has said that all of these Spider-Man related movies will be in the connected to the MCU, like the Venom movie. And then I totally forgot that they're making a movie titled Silver and Black with the Silver Sable and the Black Cat. And that probably is about as good as what it sounds. And supposedly she claims that those are all going to be connected to the MCU, but then Kevin Feige was like, not so much. He kind of put the kibosh on it.
So, I say that to me again, because so Spider-Man is going to be connected. The Spider-Man movies are going to be connected to the MCU, or no?
Yeah, the anything that is a actual Spider-Man movie is connected to the MCU, but the like Black Cat, Silver Sable movie, and the Venom movie, even though those are Spider-Man universe characters, those movies are not connected to the MCU.
Okay, all right. Which I guess is fine. Do we really need the Black and Silver movie?
Probably not. No. But he did say that they're already working on Spider-Man 2, the second Spider-Man Homecoming movie. That's not the title, but. And he said that movie will debut after. That'll be the first Marvel movie after Avengers 4.
Wow. So they're already in. Because they're in Phase 3 right now, so that will be after Phase 4 or part of Phase 4?
I think that kickstarts the next phase.
Okay. All right. I'm excited. Are you excited, Atterbury?
I'm totally excited for any addition to the MCU.
All right. Good. Good, 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 good. Yeah. So, all right. That's some news. That's some Spider-Man news. So, of course, Spider-Man Homecoming hasn't come out yet. I see it this week. But they've already greenlit another one and it'll be part of Marvel Cinematic Universe, but the lesser characters, which unfortunately it would be cool to have Venom in that in the MCU universe. Maybe not necessarily the other two that were mentioned. But, you know, I don't know. My opinion is like if you're gonna do it all. But it's weird to me that Marvel could get Spider-Man but not the rights to those other two very smallish characters. Weird.
It may just be that Marvel doesn't want to do the work of making those movies, but doesn't trust Sony to execute them at a high enough quality for them to be part of the MCU.
Oh, all right. I get that. I get it.
Black Cat would be a great addition, you know, but
I wonder how they would work in that storyline. I don't know.
She's a thief, not too terribly different from Catwoman.
All right. I'm still waiting. Like, do you ever think that there's going to be a Marvel DC crossover? Like, do you think at one point Warner Brothers and Disney will come together and be like, we're going to make a movie to end all movies, basically, and it's going to be Batman and Superman and Justice League with Avengers fighting some crazy superhero or two?
I think we're going to have to wait and see until the DC film universe actually has good stuff that they're putting out consistently. I don't think Marvel's going to want to touch that sinking ship until it's, righted itself.
Would you want to see something like that, or do you think that, like...
Totally. I would watch that.
Jeremy?
I think we all would.
I'd watch it.
So, like if it was, like, a trilogy type of thing, and, like, it was just...
Let's not get carried away. Just one movie. Let's just start with one movie.
You
can't fit all that crap in one movie.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, there's so many characters that you have to have at least a trilogy for it. I'm curious. I wonder if Warner Brothers and Disney would ever get out of their egos to, like, split profits 50-50. I mean, because technically those movies could be the biggest movies ever made.
I think those would be huge.
Those would make a little bit of money. Oh, there was some Captain America news recently.
Oh, what's Captain America news?
Chris Evans has announced that these two Avenger movies that he's doing concludes his contract with the MCU and officially wraps up their plans for their current plans for Captain America, his storyline in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
All right. So in the recent Captain America, or I guess, I mean, in the 2009 Captain America series in comic book form, Captain America was assassinated. He was shot. And then Bucky Barnes took over the role. Do you think they'll go that route, or do they think they'll wrap everything up nicely and he'll die like, you know, Godfather did, you know, at a home alone, basically, old man?
With an orange in his mouth.
I mean, because you know they're not done telling Captain America stories. I mean, they'll either reboot everything imaginable, starting with Iron Man, or they'll replace actors or get the same actors. What do you think?
I think that they'll probably just continue the character and probably get off. I wouldn't be surprised if they handed it off to Sebastian Stan. Okay. That wouldn't surprise me at all. I feel like they're building up something with that character. He's going to play a more and more prominent role, I think, at some point.
Okay.
Currently, the Falcon is Captain America in the comics.
Really?
He actually has got a suit. He rocks the shield, the whole nine yards. But, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they kind of do with what they're doing kind of with Iron Man, with Robert Downey Jr., where you may not get a full-on Iron Man movie anymore, but he was heavy in Captain America. He's going to be, you know... The previews for the Spider-Man movie almost looks like it's an Iron Man movie, guest starring Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So it could end up being that, you know, you don't really get as much a Captain America movie anymore, but he could be, you know, like make an appearance in a Black Widow movie or something like that.
Okay. I could see that. Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, yeah. And we've talked about it before. It would be cool to, like, you know, once these stories wrap up, if they, like, win another way, like if they brought in Blade, you know, into the Marvel Cinematic Universe after they wrapped everything up, and the ones that we really haven't seen, you know?
Definitely. I would love to see that a little bit more, but, I mean, it's hard because I feel like, so many of the really great characters are already wrapped up in other things.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, I think one thing we can all agree on is that what I would love to see more than anything is a MCU X-Men movie. God, just give me that. That's what I want to see, really.
Well, I mean, if Marvel
could MCU X-Men, MCU Fantastic Four.
Yeah, exactly. Things. Just, I mean, and I was hearing on the news that they were talking about a new reboot of the Fantastic Four already, and they're talking about making it a young adult kids movie. Had you heard that, Brian?
I have heard that, and I am completely out. No fucking way. I am not going to fuck around. I'm out. I am completely out of Fantastic Four unless Marvel does it right, you know, like they've been doing the rest. Yeah, I'm fucking out. They tried three times, you're out.
Yeah, I could not agree more. That just needs to be given back to Marvel, for Christ's sake.
They do well.
I would watch a Marvel Fantastic Four movie, but I have no interest in a Fox Fantastic Four movie.
Yep.
Same here.
I think
that's how we all feel.
Yeah.
We're all in agreement. So that's good. I will definitely let you know how Amazing Spider-Man Homecoming is, because I'll see that this week, and hopefully it's good.
When is the release date on that one?
I can just go with you, and then you don't have to tell me later.
That's true. Jeremy could go with me, so that might happen. I might have Jeremy come with me on Wednesday, and we can both tell John how good it was.
we'll definitely talk about that next week then, because the movie comes out on July 7th.
Yes.
So we got a little bit of time before that, but I can't wait to hear about it.
Very cool. Very cool. So speaking of movies coming out, I saw a couple movies. I saw War for the Planet of the Apes, which is the third installment of this recently rebooted Planet of the Apes franchise.
Third and final, right?
I don't know if final, but it definitely looks that way as far as with the Caesar storyline.
So you're saying that Caesar dies?
No, not at all. Not at all. But I think that they were...
Spoilers!
Oh, no, not at all. It's more of... He was the focal point of the series, and I think they could move on because there's characters that are introduced from, you know, the original series, and, you know, because this was all about... this is kind of like a big prequel to, basically, the Planet of the Apes. So, and it was good. It's 2.5 hours, which almost every movie is now. But it was good. Visual effects were great. The story was amazing. It's got emotional heft to it. Woody Harrelson is an awesome bad guy. It was damn good. It's a little slow moving here and there, but that's, 2.5 hours is a long time. But it was a good third movie for sure. I like the second one the best. This third one is the second best, and the first one I thought was the weakest. But it was still damn good. And if y'all are a fan of the Apes movies, you will definitely like this one.
I love those movies.
Yeah, so you're going to really like this one. And I really think that when you see it, you're going to be like, okay, so I see where they're going. And I think you'll see, you know, how, you know, this whole story arc has concluded, and there's going to be another big story arc coming. So I think you'll like that. And plus, they introduce some really great comedic relief in the form of a new character of an ape. And it is this ape is voiced by Steve Zahn, and it is amazing.
That's where he's been.
It's where he's been.
That's why he wasn't at that thing you do reunion show. Monkey voiceover work.
It was so good, and like it could have been handled so poorly, but it comes across so good, and it's like much needed because it is a very serious, dramatic movie for the most part. And like,
just tell me that his monkey's named Lenny, please.
No, it's not Lenny. But you're
that was a huge, huge missed opportunity.
Absolutely. But no, you'll really like it. And he was so good. And like, it got crowd reactions and everything. Like, and I think that one was just like critics only. And like, when you have a room full of critics reacting that way to something, you know you have something special. So everybody really liked it. But yeah, it's a great movie. You're really going to like
it. They hate everything.
We hate everything.
I need to know is at the end of that movie, I need an end credit scene of Mark Wahlberg coming out of space and landing.
I'm not going to give you the satisfaction. I don't understand the question and I won't respond to it. I think that's one of the worst movies of all time. Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes movie with Mark Wahlberg. Oh, so
it's
bad.
It's not good.
No, it is not good. Oh, God. Nope, not for me. But no, there is no end credit sequence to answer your question. And the 2.5 hours is long enough. But yeah, damn fine visual effects work. And they do a good job. It was a really good movie. Good summer.
And what was the other movie you saw?
One of the best movies I've seen all year, probably the most fun I've had in the theater in a long time. It is a little movie called Baby Driver, directed by Edgar Wright, who gave us Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, The World's End, and Scott Pilgrim. This is his new
movie. I have one pressing question about this movie.
Yes.
Is it about a baby that drives or about somebody that drives babies?
No. Have you seen the trailer for it?
No.
Oh my God. Seriously, John, after this podcast, you're going to watch a trailer for this and you're going to watch a trailer for this while we're on this chat.
So it's not about babies that drive or about people that drive babies.
No, not at all.
I'm very disappointed by this.
So what about a talking baby with John Travolta?
Nope.
And Bruce Willis?
You know what? If they brought Look Who's Talking back and
talk about a missed opportunity.
Seriously, I would totally watch that movie. I miss those guys. I miss those movies. I remember the third movie when it was the talking dogs, and it was Danny DeVito and Diane Keaton as the dogs. Oh, how do I miss those days? But no, Baby Driver is an amazing movie by Edgar Wright. It is fast-paced, action-packed, and full of Edgar Wright stuff from all of his past movies. Baby Driver centers on maybe an early 20-something kid who's named Baby, B-A-B-Y. And he is a getaway driver for a ruthless band of criminals. And he has, early in his childhood, he was in a wreck, which caused a constant ringing in his head. So he constantly listens to his iPod with music to drown out everything. So it makes him super focused on being the best getaway driver ever. And it is so badass. And the soundtrack is probably one of the best soundtracks since Pulp Fiction. It is
awesome.
So good. And, I mean, it's everything you want in an Edgar Wright movie. I mean, there's no Nick Frost or Simon Pegg killing zombies, but it's up there. I mean, it is damn good. And it is so much fun. John Hamm is in it. It's great to see John Hamm play a bad guy. What's his name? Who else is in this? Jamie Foxx is in it, which is great. And Kevin Spacey's in it. I mean, there's everybody's a bad guy in this movie. It's amazing. So I think you're going to like it. If you like music and you like fun, action-packed Edgar Wright stuff, you're going to love Baby Driver and you're going to have so much fun with it. I can't wait for y'all to see it.
Yeah, I'm super excited to watch that one.
Yes, I think you're really going to like it. So yeah, those were the two movies that are coming out. They are not out yet. I believe Baby Driver actually comes out this Wednesday, tomorrow. So you'll look for the review on that. And you just heard my review now. Go see it. It's more fun than Transformers and probably Beauty and the Beast combined. So
way to set the bar low, my friend.
Oh, the bar low. No, you're going to really like this movie. Apes is on a different level because Apes takes itself very seriously, whereas Baby Driver doesn't. But nonetheless, still really fun. So yes, that is those two movies. Let's get into this new news about the Super Nintendo, the SNES classic that's coming out. They announced it today. We knew it was coming out. They knew they were doing it. But let's talk about the first one they did last year, the NES Classic, which seemed like a great product when they announced it. $60 for actually, you know, this Nintendo system, original Nintendo system that fits in your hand. It comes loaded with like 30 games. You have the original controller, and it hooks back to your TV via HDMI, so you can get all these games in high def. So when they released it, of course, Nintendo fucked everybody over because they only made like two consoles for like the first month, and then they just released them like five at a time. So just like the market was crazy, and then the controller that came with it was literally like 2 feet long. So nobody sits in front of a TV anymore and plays video games. You have a big living room and you have wireless controllers. Did y'all have a chance to play that old NES system?
The original or the classic?
Yeah, the classic.
I did not get to play the classic because I don't know anyone that even got their hands on one.
Okay, see, my point exactly. Nintendo does this. They're idiots.
Jeremy, they're assholes.
Yes, Jeremy, what about you?
Did not play it.
All right, So I got a chance to play it, and it was cool. I mean, despite the cord length for the controller, which really sucked. I mean, it literally was a 2 or 3 foot controller, and when you're playing with it wired, I mean, nobody does that anymore. So that was really annoying. But playing all those games were really fun. I mean, you'll play them, you know, for like a few minutes, and then but you'll go back to Xbox One or PS4 games, you know, almost immediately. But it was a cool system, but they did not release a whole lot, and they were $60. And then, like you said, like you didn't know anybody who had one. They were going for like $200 or more online, right?
Yeah, you can pick one up on Amazon now for $280 secondhand,
which is ridiculous.
That's outrageous, yeah. They're doing the same thing with the Super Nintendo.
Yes, they
are.
And
I'm really wondering if they're – I have a feeling that they're going to do the same exact shit where they just creep out a couple consoles and it's, you know, really hard to get. I really feel like they're just gearing up towards releasing one big master system that has all the different Nintendo systems on it.
I mean, that would be ideal because, I mean – So this new SNES, it's the same, you know, the same concept as the NES. It's just with Super Nintendo games. It's the same, you know, they've actually extended the cord length to 5 feet, which is better, but not great. And you still have the HDMI hookup, and it comes loaded with 30 games. 30 games are really cool, just like the last classic was. But this one is $20 more, so they are actually tacking on $20 more to this.
Is outrageous because it's the exact same guts running it.
Yeah, $80 as opposed to $60. So they're upping the price, and there's no news on if they're going to make enough, you know, at launch, you know. Because I mean, if they made enough at launch, there's not going to be an aftermarket for them, you know.
Yeah.
But Nintendo's notorious. Like I remember when the Wii came out, the first Wii, you could barely find them, you know. So I don't get their strategy because clearly everybody wants one, and if you do that on launch for like a cheap price point like that, everybody would get it instead of like waiting, you know, a week or
totally
two, you know?
It's just I think it's all about you know, they're creating a Tickle Me Elmo situation where everyone's talking about it, it's on the news, and you know, just like it has this kind of a mythical status because it's so hard to find.
It's crazy. Jeremy, what do you think about this?
I don't know, man. I've never been a big Nintendo fan, really, anyway. They just always kind of seem to do the fairly douchey stuff like this. So it doesn't surprise me that they're going to do the exact same thing with this that they did with the previous system.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still pretty butthurt about the Wii U and that whole experience because I got it. I was excited about it. And then they just didn't have any good game support for it. And there was just the weakest software support imaginable. And, you know, I mean, the thing is that they keep their titles, proprietary titles, so close to the vest. We've got, you know, Legend of Zelda, Pokemon, Mario, all these kinds of things, Kirby, Metroid, whatever. And then they put out the Wii U, which is an entirely new system, and they didn't really make any new games for that system that featured those characters. There was not a big Pokemon game. There was not a new Legend of Zelda game. They made 2 remasters for it. There wasn't a new Metroid game. There wasn't, you know, all these things that they don't release for anything else. They didn't even put out for their new system. And then just like 3 years later, they're like, oh, we're just going to put out the Nintendo Switch. And it's all just so many strange decisions that it's basically got me at the point now where I'm pretty much just out. I would rather just use an emulator and and not fuck with it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, if they do this with every system, you know, that's going to technically be 3 or 4 HDMI inputs into your TV as already. I mean, nobody wants that.
It's ridiculous. Just put out because the thing is that the guts that are running these systems are so overpowered that it could run all of the different game systems that they have on it. Just put out one machine that has every Game Boy game, every, you know, Nintendo 64 game, every Super Nintendo and every NES game, and even some of the Wii U games or the Wii games, and just give people what they want. Put it wireless controllers and just leave people alone. let them do their games, and just put out one system that has all of it. Sell it for $300. I'll fucking buy it. But I just don't want to have to buy a bunch of different systems, and I don't have to buy it secondhand for way inflated prices. It's just madness.
They'll do exactly that, but after they've released every other console.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. The fucking George Lucas or the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings thing, where they released their first the original and then the remastered and then the box set.
Yes, I am a sucker for all of that too. So
yeah.
So let's talk about some of the the video games that are coming out on this SNES, this Super Nintendo Entertainment System, which comes out September 29th for $80. You have Contra 3. You have the amazing Donkey Kong Country, which was a lot of fun. Earthbound, awesome. Final Fantasy 3. My favorite game, F-Zero, will be on it. Kirby Superstar, Kirby's Dream Course, The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, Mega Man X, Secret of Mana, Star Fox, and the unreleased crazy Star Fox 2 will be up there.
That's exciting and very interesting. I'm like, really? There's a second Star Fox game for Super Nintendo that we had no idea about?
Well, I remember like a long time ago it was always rumored to be one, but I guess they made it and never released it. But we'll get it on this system, which is kind of a cool thing because it's kind of like exclusive.
Yeah, that is really cool, actually. I think that they should do that for all of they had done that for the NES Classic, like, oh, yeah, we're also going to give you Super Mario Brothers 4 for NES. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, that would have been so cool. So also Street Fighter 2 Turbo, Super Castlevania 4 for John, Super Ghouls and Ghosts, Super Mario Kart, Super Mario RPG, Super Mario World, Super Metroid, Super Punch-Out, and Yoshi's Island. So we'll see if this lasts. I mean, the Nintendo Classic, which came out last fall, it's already discontinued earlier this year. Like, Nintendo launched it in the fall. Several months went by. They discontinued it. Even they were having great sales. They just were done. So I guess they want everybody to buy this. And it's weird. Like, what? I mean, if you were in a store and you had a little extra money and you saw that, and you're like, oh, $60. Fuck it, I'll do it. I mean, you'd probably buy one just to have, you know, that nostalgic feeling. But I don't know why they discontinued it. So, $80, same thing, Super Nintendo. Hopefully they pull their head out of their ass and not release, you know, 2 to 3 consoles in the world at launch like they did last time. So.
Yeah, they do a lot of really weird stuff. I was reading an interview with the guy that designed the newest Legend of Zelda game for the Nintendo Switch. Yeah. And he was saying that he was making a big deal saying, you know, for this game, I really wanted it to be a modern game. So I actually started playing other video games before I made this game.
Yeah.
And apparently this guy thinks that the best way for him to make video games is to not play any other video games. And that was his strategy for all the stuff that he's created and put out beforehand. Yeah. Just completely getting himself in a little box and bubble and then going. That's why the games are so kind of out of touch with the modern times, I think.
Yeah. No, I get it.
And then this one, he's like, yeah, it feels like Skyrim because I played a bunch of Skyrim when I made this game. Just insane stuff.
It is. In addition to this Super Nintendo system, SNES, I can never say that. Isn't Sega going to release like every game imaginable for like the iPhone, like your mobile devices? Isn't that what I'm hearing?
Sega Forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sega Forever is coming out for the Apple Store, and basically what it seems is that they're going to have it all free to play, but with ads. And then if you pay $2 per game or whatever, then you can have them to own without ads.
I wonder how that's going to work. I wonder if you're like middle of gameplay and then just an ad pops up and you have to get right back into it.
They actually have a bunch of Sega games available on the App Store right now under this format. They just haven't launched it under the Sega Forever title. So if you go on your iPhone right now, you can download Sonic the Hedgehog, you know, 1 through 4 or whatever, or Crazy Taxi or Altered Beast or Comic Zone or any of these, a handful of different Sega Genesis or even Sega CD or Sega Dreamcast games.
Yeah.
And the way it works is basically it starts off, boom, you get hit with an ad. You finish a level, boom, you get hit with an ad. It's super annoying. It's not a lot of fun. But the game is $2. Like, if you want to buy the original Sonic, it's $2. But trying to play that fucking game on mobile is not fun. Trying to do it on touchscreen is really, really, really not fun at all.
Yeah, that's what I've played a few games on mobile style, and I don't anymore. It's too ridiculous. Jeremy, do you play stuff on your mobile phone, like games like that?
No, nothing like that.
Me too.
Yeah, games that are not designed for mobile just don't work well on mobile. You know, if you get one of those Bluetooth controllers, that's a game controller that you can plug, you know, you can use on your iPhone or your iPad or whatever, then that'll work just fine. That's cool. But trying to do it with touchscreen stuff is just freaking awful.
Yeah. All right. I agree. Well, let's talk about some entertainment news for a second. Did y'all ever see Ben Affleck in the movie The Accountant?
I did not.
Jeremy?
I have not. Right. But I'm going to be watching it probably later tonight.
Okay, cool. I think you'll like it. I really liked the movie. It was a solid, good Ben Affleck film. I really liked it. They did a good job.
So it's solid.
It's solid.
And it's good.
And it's good. And it's good. And it's solid. Yeah. I mean, it's not like the best movie you'll ever see, but they did a good job with it. And they left it open for a sequel.
But it's solid.
It's solid. And good. It's not liquidy at all. but yeah, they left it open for a sequel, and it seems like the director, Gavin O'Connor, and Ben Affleck are coming back for a sequel to The Accountant. And I'm very happy about this. So once you watch this, I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it, because I definitely enjoyed it better than most Affleck movies. So
he's got to be doing something while they're rewriting the Batman movie for like the third time.
And after you see this, you're like, why didn't he just do The Accountant instead of these Batman movies? But I get it. He's a fan.
I'll watch it this weekend too, so I can give my opinion on it. I mean, I don't expect it'll be, you know, a Reindeer Games level of awesome, but we'll see.
A Reindeer level game of awesome. Wow. I never thought I'd hear that.
He was the bomb in Phantoms.
Yo.
Yo. My favorite. So what else? Before we get into our drummer section, what anything else y'all want to talk about?
I just power watched season 2 of Master of None, and okay. I had to talk about it.
Good. So because I have seen that whole show too, and that whole series, that whole second season, and I'm going to preface this with saying, because I think I've touched on it a little bit, but the first season of Master of None was damn good. And then when the second season came out and I finished it, I couldn't believe if you thought season 1 was awesome, season 2 is even better.
Absolutely. Season 1 was great, but season 2 went from being great to being fucking art.
Yeah. Like, he really, like, there are several episodes when they're like shot differently, shot overseas, shot in different colors, and then like art. Like, there is a episode in the show that takes place over many Thanksgivings, and it tells a story of Aziz Ansari and his gay black female friend and Thanksgivings he spends there, and to tell it over the course of how many years they've known each other. And it was like, damn, this is like movie magic, you know? Like,
yeah, so God. Well, and one of the episodes, most of the episodes are about a half hour long, but I think it's the second to last episode is actually like an hour and 45 minutes long.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good one.
And it's just so good. The whole time I was watching it, I was like, oh my God, this is the best rom-com I've ever seen. And it's, you know, and it's just a Netflix original comedy show. I was just blown away by how many shots that I found myself just blown away by. Just looking at it, I'm like, fuck, that looks so good. I just couldn't believe how beautiful what they were presenting ended up being.
Yeah, and it is. So there's also another episode in the show where it's about Aziz Ansari's dating life, and how it's told is like it looks like he's on one dinner and one date, but every time like he picks up a menu or like, you know, a big act, like a big scene, like a big like happening, like the waiter comes by, it's a different girl, and there's like 15 different girls, and they're all different personalities. And it was just how the way that was told was really funny. And like one of the girls, like I went back and watched it several times because one of the girls he goes on a date with is a huge pro wrestling fan and loves video games.
I thought of you when I watched that.
She even talked about playing Overwatch and everything. And I know. I was like, dude, is this me? So it was just so funny, and like just every, you know, we've all been on dates before, and like it seems like he captured like perfectly like different dates or different groups of people.
Oh, there's so many things that he captures so well in that show. Whereas a guy, especially in the dating world, you could relate to that so much. Like there's this one scene towards the end of the season where he walks away from a girl that he's got, you know, he's fallen in love with, and he doesn't act in that moment, and he gets in a cab, and you just, it's literally a 5-minute shot of him just riding home in this cab in silence, and you just see the frustration all over his face, and we've all been there. So it's just like, oh, it was so incredible to watch that and be so entertained by just literally watching a guy ride in the back of a cab by himself.
Yeah, it's an amazing show, and they really outdid themselves in the second season, and I can't wait for a third season. Like, it's damn good. And Jeremy, if you haven't seen Master of None, you need to watch that.
We talked about it. I marathoned it when it came out.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's true. So are you? I'm sorry, I forgot that. So are you excited that John watched it and that he loved it?
Yeah, I figured he would.
So good.
I figured he'd be into it.
Now, really, yeah. I really like. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead. I was gonna say that's just one of the best, like, just shot, best looking shows I've ever seen. Just like all the cinematography is just so fantastic, and the storytelling was amazing.
Yeah. Aziz Ansari's come a long way from being kind of like the sidekick comedy guy to like really make, like, I mean, damn, that show wasn't amazing. You know, because it's dramatic and
comedic. Oh yeah,
yeah, it's damn good.
It was surprising to have watched him show off the fact that he can actually be a damn convincing lead man, you know, in a romantic scene, which was just something we don't even remotely associate him with, at least not from what we've seen him with in the past.
Yeah.
But there were so many different romantic parts in this season, and at no point did it seem weird or out of place. You believed it. It was convincing, and it was emotionally powerful. It was so, so brilliantly done.
I totally agree. I really love it, too. Yeah, there was a really good episode, if you remember the religion episode, where he didn't want to keep kosher or something like that, but his parents did. And those are his real parents in real life that are in the show, which is amazing.
I believe it.
Yeah, and they're hilarious.
Especially his dad, man. The whole episode where – because his dad's a proctologist.
Yeah.
And so there's this whole episode where he takes Aziz to work and basically shows him all the different things that he's pulled out of people's butts. It's so good.
It is great. It was a damn good season, and I really loved it. And I'm glad you loved it too. So if you haven't seen Master of None at all, seriously, watch both seasons. And if you haven't seen season two yet, seriously do it. Watch that before you watch this upcoming show we're going to talk about. It's called The Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, GLOW, which was an old 80s show, which was just like WWE or WWF, Monday Night Nitro, but it just featured women wrestlers. And now, since there's like a resurgence and all this and indie wrestling stuff and pro wrestling, they made a documentary on the women now that were in GLOW, and now the creator of Weeds and Orange is the New Black got together a new show that is GLOW, starring Allison Brie and Mark Marone, and it is amazing. I've only seen a couple episodes, but you guys have seen some episodes, right?
I have seen no episodes.
Jeremy?
I've seen all the episodes.
Okay, so, you know, I'm talking to somebody who does not watch wrestling at all, but it's not just about the wrestling in the show. It's like about these amazing characters and you know, doing something in the 80s feel. What do you think about the show?
I liked it. All the characters are great. The show looks good. I mean, it's, you know, it's another just kind of awesome Netflix show. And the nice thing about this show is it's 10 episodes, but I think all the episodes are about 35 minutes. So if you decide you want to kind of marathon through it, it's not something that's going to take you like 4 or 5 days. You know, it's not like a, it's not like when you're watching the first season of like Daredevil or anything like that, where it's, you know, 12 hours worth of TV.
Yeah.
That you're sitting through. But yeah, I mean, it's like everything is, all the episodes are really fun. You know, the wrestling scenes are pretty good. You know, seeing the characters go from having absolutely no clue what's going on to like getting better, and just, you know, the camaraderie of the characters. It's all, it's a great show.
Good, good, good. And I'm so happy it's out, because, you know, if you grew up in the 80s, you probably saw GLOW. You probably saw, I mean, it was like a real WWE show with women. And also on Netflix is that documentary I mentioned, which is highly recommended. But this show, starring Alison Brie, you know, you saw her in Mad Men and numerous other films. She is the star of the show, and it's just, it's a great, I've only seen a couple episodes so far, but I am hooked and cannot wait to finish it. By next week, of course, I will finish it and have more to say. Atterbury, if you have time, you need to do it.
I'll be checking it out.
Check that out. GLOW. So, yes. So, GLOW and all the other good shows, we'll have more to talk about next week. But for our last segment, we're going to talk about drummers. So, you both were in bands. Y'all been in bands together. How do you pick a drummer? What constitutes, like, a good drummer?
Usually, in my experience, you pick a drummer by choosing the one person you know that plays drums.
And that says yes.
Why is that?
Nobody fucking plays drums, man. It's so hard to find a drummer. It's always, like, when you find a drummer, you're just like, oh, man, you play drums and you have your own drum set. Because, you know, like, a lot of people say they play drums, but 90% of them are god-awful. And, you know, half of them don't have their own kit. So, you know, once you can actually find a drummer that says yes and has his own kit and can keep a beat, it's, you're sold.
Oh, so that's how it is. And Jeremy, you feel the same way?
Oh, for sure.
So I remember growing up with Jeremy, because I've known Jeremy that long. You had a drummer named Cliff. What was he like? What was his personality like?
Probably largely unpredictable.
Is that like most drummers?
They vary.
They vary?
Yeah.
So basically, if you find that drummer, it's kind of like a diamond in the rough. You just, like, got to do it, whatever it takes to get them in the band.
Pretty much. I mean, that's been my experience, is when you find a drummer, you just try to get them in the band and try to keep them in the band. And that's the tricky part, man. It's really, really, like, ridiculously hard to find a drummer.
Now, you both play guitar, but can any of you play, like, you know, standard drum beats or anything like that, or rhythm on like a drum, like keep time at least for just a little bit?
I would say I am Meg White level of drumming.
Okay. So, like, just like 1, 2, 3, 4 with a two, two.
Yeah, it's primitive, but I can do it.
What about you, Jeremy?
I have great time, but no experience playing the drums. It's definitely one of those things that I know the fundamentals of a drum beat, but it's one of those things that sounds like a guitar player trying to play the drums.
Okay. All right. So it's been said before that drummers are the backbone of a band. Is that true?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Would you say the drummer is usually, like, the one that, like, keeps the time and keeps the pace throughout the whole show and can change it at any point?
I would say that's the bass player.
That's the bass player?
Well, I think it's the bass player's job to be the metronome, and the drummer's job is to fill in with the bass player.
Okay. All right.
That's my opinion.
All right. So let's get into it. Do we want to talk about our favorite drummers or about songs?
Well, what I was suggesting is that we just talk about the favorite drummers and then perhaps list like a favorite song of that drummer's that shows off their talent.
Okay. All right. Well, let's do it. Who wants to start?
I'll start.
You start.
I'll be down to start this off. So, obviously, I'm going to go with everybody's favorite drummer and say Keith Moon, because Keith Moon from The Who is an amazing drummer.
He died way before his time, too.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, it was his time, and he was circling the drain for a long time. I don't think anyone was surprised when they heard that Keith Moon died. But Keith Moon's, like, frantic drumming and incredible energy just drove the band. When you listen to any of the Who songs, you know, all the parts are good, and they're all interesting, but what really creates that incredible punk rock energy that band captured was the drumming of Keith Moon. And one great example for that would be the song Substitute. Most of us have heard that song, but it's not that interesting of a song, but the drumming takes it to a whole new level and makes it groove and makes it like a fun rock song. And so that's really a great example. There's so many fantastic examples of his fantastic drumming, but that's a really cool one, I think.
All right.
Up next, I'm going to say Mick Fleetwood of Fleetwood Mac.
Well, if the drummer's name is, you know, the name of the band, basically.
half of the name of the band.
Yeah, but still.
It's true. But he is absolutely, in my opinion, one of the best drummers of, you know, pop music ever. And one great example of his really interesting drum style is the song What Makes You Think You're the One off of the album Tusk. It's just such a asymmetrical, unusual beat, but it works so perfectly for that song. So I love to hear that. He was always really great at playing in the pocket, playing, you know, simple stuff that worked, but his fills were interesting, and the stuff that he did worked so perfectly within the song. But so in this song, it's just a really good example of him kind of getting out of the box a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I'm also going to say Charlie Watts of the Rolling Stones.
Oh.
Charlie Watts ain't fancy, but man, does he lay it down exactly the way it needs to be laid down. It just tight and fun and just driving. It's just absolutely perfect for what it needed to be. And a great example of his drumming is the song Tumbling Dice from the album Exile on Main Street.
Good.
Lastly, I'm going to say one of my favorite drummers is actually Stevie Wonder.
Well, then.
A lot of people to this day don't even know is a drummer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, not all of his songs were him playing the drums on the record, but a large portion of them are. And, you know, a lot of his biggest songs actually was him playing the drums. So if you've heard the song You Are the Sunshine of My Life, that's Stevie playing drums on that song. And it's a very unique style of drumming. He does a lot of stuff with the hi-hat, and he just does what he feels as opposed to doing what is supposed to be done. And that's what makes it so brilliant and so unique, is his take on the drumming itself, because he plays so many different instruments, and you can hear that he's not a drummer playing drums. He's just an incredible all-around musician who happens to be playing drums in this moment.
Because didn't he play it on Superstition?
He did play on Superstition as well.
Yeah, which is a really good drum beat.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's, you know, just a lot of the tracks on his various albums are him playing drums, but those are just a few of them.
That's pretty cool. I like it.
That wraps up my little list.
That's good. What about you, Jeremy?
Let's see. I'll go first with Billy Martin from Modesky Martin and Wood. They're kind of a jazz band that does a lot of jamming, and on they played as a backing band on a John Scofield album called A Go-Go, and it just, everything the guy does is just super musical. There's no real flash to it. It just, you know, those three guys play really well together, and it's like just three musicians that fit perfectly. And then when they played with Scofield and they had the guitar in there, And, you know, they're kind of playing his tunes with a little bit of, like, their groove on it. It's just fantastic. Killer stuff. And probably my two favorites are the two opening tracks on that album. There's a Go-Go and then Chank. And they're just they're perfect.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. Next, I'm gonna go with Ginger Baker. When I listen to Cream, there's not a lot of times that when I hear a drummer where I just really want to listen to the drummer. But I feel like when I listen to a lot of Cream stuff, I can just sit back and, I mean, because you have two other fantastic musicians in that band, but man, I can just really sit back and listen to Ginger Baker over everything else that's going on.
Absolutely. What's one of your favorite examples of his drumming?
Man, probably Strange Brew.
Ah, yes.
It's just kind of like pockety, and you know, that another great example of just fitting great with the dude you're playing with, even though those guys hate each other.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, of course it's super cliche, but the drums on the live performance of Crossroads are just outrageously good.
Mm-hmm.
That whole song just is fucking epic.
Yeah, so good. Oh, let's see. And I was going to go with Stuart Copeland. I know I'm kind of like all trios on this, but a lot of those old Police tunes, you know, Sting, when he wrote those songs, were ballads. So, and Stuart Copeland's like, nope, we got to speed them up. And it was, you know, very much shades from That Thing You Do, where they would go to the gig and then he would launch into it at like double the speed that Sting wrote it.
And those songs grooved, man. Those are such great drums on those tracks.
There's just so much groove that in that band that comes from him.
Absolutely.
That's good. That's good. Well, I like it. I like it.
All right, Brian, what about you?
All right, so before I get into mine, I just have to mention, you know, the ones that are obvious. Neil Peart from Rush, John Bonham from Led Zeppelin, and Lars Ulrich from Metallica. Those are excellent drummers. We all know that they're in a category on their own. Enough said on that. The ones that I am going to go with, I'm going to have to go
the ones that you listed but are not on your list?
Correct. Those are in their own category. The ones that I really like, I'm going to go with John Fishman from Fish. I think he is an awesome drummer, and he does like a jazz, punk, rock type of style, and the dude is just badass. And like, especially his song Rift, with that drum, those drums, is just simply amazing. I like John Fishman. I don't know if Atterbury knows much of Fish, but I think Jeremy, you do, right?
I do.
Do you like John Fishman?
I do very much.
Yeah.
Very musical drummer.
Yeah, he is a badass. So that's...
He kind of holds that band together, I think.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. He's a badass. He's a musical genius and an amazing drummer that plays in a dress. So it's awesome. I am also going to have to go with Questlove. Do y'all like him?
No doubt. He's a great drummer.
For The Roots, and, you know, he's on The Tonight Show. I mean, he's an awesome drummer. And I think he's one of, like, you know, I think a lot of drummers, they know music, but I think Questlove, like, super passionate about all of music. And he just, if you follow him on social media, he brings up all these old great musicians and just, he knows a lot about them. So, it's good to see, like, when filmmakers love all sorts of movies, and I think Questlove is like that, but towards music, and it's great to see that. And he's a great drummer too. So I have to say him. And then I have a female one. Her name's Janet Weiss. And yes, Janet Weiss from Rocky Horror Picture Show. Not the same person, but same name. She is a drummer for, Sleater-Kinney. And her drum stuff on the song O is so good. She is a badass drummer. She's a rockin' trick. chick drummer, and she is amazing. I love her so much. So if you haven't heard of Sleater-Kinney or even that song Oh, highly recommend listening to that. It is amazing. And we haven't – have we mentioned Dave Grohl yet?
We have not. I was just about to mention him, though.
Okay, mention him. Mention him.
Dave Grohl is absolutely one of the best drummers of our generation, I think, for rock music. You know, I have no idea what he sounds like if he's trying to do jazz or any other style besides rock. But as far as rock drummers go, just so great. I mean, his stuff with Nirvana was, I think, good. But in my opinion, if we look at his later work, when he was even doing something like playing the drums for the Tenacious D albums, those drums are fucking fire.
You know what? One thing about Dave Grohl is that, like, there's been so many stories about him on how, like, a genuine, nice, awesome person he is.
Yeah, I think we've all heard stories about how badass Dave Grohl is and how nice he is. But as far as a drummer is concerned, man, he just brings the thunder to those rock songs. It's so good. And, you know, I'm also going to give one more shout out. I want to talk about Chad Smith just a little bit from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I'm not a huge fan of the band Red Hot Chili Peppers, but Chad Smith is a fucking great drummer.
Okay. Chad Smith.
For his style.
For his style. What about Ringo Starr, the Beatles?
Is there any question that Ringo's one of the best drummers for pop music ever?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, there you go.
I don't think there's any question about that.
All right. Well, we haven't mentioned him. And there's a lot of jazz ones like Buddy Rich or something like that that are all good. Or
Buddy Rich was good.
he was. We will say he's good. He will say he's good. What about Tommy Lee?
Why are we bringing him up?
I just had to ask. I just remember. I actually bought his solo album. I can't believe I did, but that was back in the 90s.
I can't believe you admitted it on the podcast.
I did. I'm sorry. I should. Yeah, that's terrible. Oh, a good. You know, one of the drummers that sings. There's only a few of those, but like Fred LeBlanc from Cowboy Mouth, and what's the guy from Genesis?
Bill Collins.
Phil Collins.
What's that guy?
What about Levon Helm?
Levon Helm from the band and Don Henley from the Eagles.
Yeah.
Henley was also a pretty great drummer. He wasn't flashy or fancy, but he made some really great grooves for those tracks.
It's good. I mean, I love a good drum. I love a good drum line. If you're into drum lines and drum music, I highly recommend, highest recommendation, look up a band called Itch.io. You like itchy, like you're scratching, you're itchy. -O, Itch.io, Itch.io, Itch.io. Look them up. They're from Denver, Colorado. Itch.io. They are a satanic Mexican drum line, and they are fucking badass. Highly recommended if you ever get to see them in person. They are amazing. And I have to mention, last Friday, I saw Iron Maiden live. And for being a very old British heavy metal band, they still got it. Like, for sure, still got it. And they are badass. And their drummer was amazing. And Eddie the Head and just everybody in there is so good. Steve Harris, Dave Murray, Adrian Smith, Bruce Dickinson. They're all amazing. So if you like Jeremy, did you ever like Iron Maiden?
Not particularly.
Okay. I was curious.
Never got into them.
I've always loved them, and it was great to see them still perform and play all the good stuff. So, drummers. We might have to – I'm curious what you guys think of Itch.io, if y'all will – listen to them at some point before next week and let me know what you think of them.
I can do that.
It'll be fun. Anything else before we leave?
No, I think that wraps it up nicely.
All right.
Itch.io. Yep. Satanic Mexican drumline.
Yeah, Itch.io. I promise you'll like them. They are badass. Well, good deal. That was a fun Mediocrity podcast. We're on iTunes under the Multimedia Men. Mediocrity. We are lots of fun. We will see you next week. We love you all. Jeremy, Jonathan, I love you both, and happy anniversary, my loves.
We love you too.
I'll see you later.